present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome back to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Evening Standard, read by Charlotte Green.
An Essex dog owner is to be prosecuted for noise pollution after council officers confiscated 20 animals from his terraced home. He'll appear in February before barking magistrates.
Thanks to Philip Baker of London for that. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Matthew Norman. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Tony Hawkes. And before we start round one, here's a cutting from the Jewish Chronicle.
By the end of the day, it was hard to see who was manipulating whom in Israel's latest political scandal, involving the Prime Minister, the opposition leader, and 10 rabbits.
Thanks to Leonard Bow of Barnet for that. Andy, how has Jimmy tuned into Gardener's World?
It's about James Goldsmith.
Mm-hmm. Think Marjorie Proops. He does look like Marjorie Proops, the other fellow, doesn't he?
He looks as if he's just been dug up, I know that.
Yeah. Shall we do it?
Is it about any of his candidates?
No.
Is it about
it's about George Gardner. So George, the one with the lop-eared one.
George.
He was deselected. Very lucky to get away with just that. He to come out with his legs crossed. And he's been adopted by Sir James.
George Gardner is the one who looks like the Lord Snooty's dad, isn't he?
He's the third Wallace and Gromit, I've always thought.
This is veteran MP Sir George Gardner's defection to the referendum party. When asked how he ever came to be involved with such a bunch of electoral no-hopers, Sir George agreed that it might look perverse now, but 20 years ago the Tories had stood a chance. Sir George has always been one of John Major's fiercest critics and once claimed that the cheeks of his bottom hold the top of the fence tightly in their grip. Still, unlike some Tory MPs, at least it was only a fence. Matthew Norman, welcome back. How did a hog roast push beef off the menu?
Well, this isn't too obscure. This is Douglas Hogg, who wins the Michael Howard inaugural award for most fiascos in a parliamentary session. I must confess, I can't keep up with it. I mean, every day there's a new calamity for him. But basically, possibly because there's another D. Hogg in the Ministry of Agriculture, he hasn't been getting any of his mail. And all these nice people have been sending him reports saying that the food chain and the abattoirs are disgusting and filthy and are about to kill us all. And none of it gets to Douglas's desk, which is a shame. Now, however, he's promised us that we're going to have league tables for abattoirs. Which, so we've got all these farmers now. It's becoming quite a social cachet for the farmers. They've got to get their cattle into the best abattoir. And there is talk of opening some private abattoirs.
Also, I was wondering the other day whether there's going to be a whole generation of children who grow up thinking that meat crisis is one word, aren't they? They're going to say, can I have some more meat crisis with my veg? It's every day in the pages.
Well, I feel sorry for Hogg because he has to eat beef at every single meal to demonstrate confidence. And he's the only Tory minister who really says, would you like a nice bit of skirt, minister? Doesn't think it's a very kind offer at all. Tony Hawkes, how was Betty quick on the buzzer?
Ah, right. Well, this is a great story this week. There's been a big debate in Westminster. Should or shouldn't vibrators be allowed in the House of Commons? And Brian Wilson on the Labour side is saying that they should, and Betty Boothroyd is saying that they shouldn't. Funny, I thought the argument would run the other way around, but that's the way it is. But basically, they want to take in these little electronic pager things that vibrate in their pockets, and so the Labour MP can be up making his speech, and then the Labour headquarters can buzz through to him. He can read a little message off which says, sit down, you're being an embarrassment. Betty Boothroyd says, no, this is not on. We can't have this. We haven't changed things in the House of Commons for 300 years. Let's keep it like that. And, if there's any vibrating to be done, do it in the privacy of your own home.
This was Betty Boothroyd's decision to ban electronic aids from the House of Commons after a Labour MP received a prompt from his pager. Betty Boothroyd was understandably furious, and TV news footage showed her demanding, "What's that bleeping noise?" though her actual words are recorded in Hansard. Alan, please listen to this.
Teacher's pet. I wanna be teacher's pet. I wanna be huddled and cuddled as close to you as I can get.
That's the lesson. We're guessing your best game.
Teacher's pride. I wanna be teacher's pride.
Alan, which
Doris Day before she was a virgin? Get that out of the way. Well, George Grossman. What? You want me to do a thing about children and league tables, do you?
Yes, well, we're a bit worried you'd gone to the lesbian gym mistress, actually. But because
I've gone for the lesbian gym. Carry on.
Alan, which class act came bottom of the league?
Oh, well, this is about primary school children and league tables, which were all announced this week. I was a bit disappointed. I see Middlesbrough still struggling. I tell you, if Wimbledon Primary School comes top, I shall be furious. I think there ought to be... I always find league very boring. I think there ought to be a primary school cup, a knockout competition, and then every May, 100,000 people would turn up at Wembley and see two schools doing sums. Coca-Cola Infants Cup. Anyway, that's what that question is about. It's about league tables.
I've written to John Major, actually, complaining as part of my, you know, citizens' charter rights, that there is not, as a parent, there is no league table of the league tables. I don't know. I don't know what, you know, I don't know how good the league tables
are. You don't know whether yours is a good league
table. I don't know if they're good league. No, I think off league hasn't been formed. He hasn't written back anyway. He's probably a bit busy.
Dear John, my child is in the Vauxhall Conference League.
This was the publication of school league tables, which showed the worst in the country to be Grange Primary in South London. They scored 8% in English and science and 0 in maths, but the headmaster said standards were improving in all four subjects. The history test proved most challenging, with papers recording Gandhi's first name as Goosey Goosey. America being discovered by Colombo, while Wat Tyler was thought to be a magazine for bathroom fixtures fans. And the scores at the end of round one are Andy and Matthew 3, but Alan and Tony in the lead with 5 points. We start round two with an item spotted in The Guardian.
The House of Commons was told yesterday that an elderly man injured when a block of ice the size of a sack of potatoes fell from an aircraft cannot sue for compensation because he failed to take the plane's registration number.
Thanks to Roy Howes of Aylesbury for sending us that. Andy, how is New Labour planning to top up its local support? Top up its local support.
Oh, yes. All measures.
Oh, that, why, are Labour going to do something about beer?
Yeah.
Really?
I thought you knew it.
Yeah. Matthew, I think Matthew's going to fill us in on this one.
Yes, this is another part of the New Labour panacea for perfect England. I don't know whether the beer's warm, but they're very, very worried that enough voters aren't getting a full pint. Because they're very much beer drinkers, of course. Peter Mandelson never happier than when downing his 11th pint of Flower's Best. So this is another very well thought out and very serious political measure, which is to ensure that all Labour voters, and indeed Tory voters, for balance, will get their full pint and not 80%. Cut out the froth.
So they're going for the drunks vote?
Yeah.
They'll be... he's actually watered down everything else that they do.
Yes, the question was about Tony Blair and his plans to force landlords to introduce oversized glasses to make sure beer drinkers get a full pint. A party spokesman said millions of ordinary drinkers were being short-changed every day. They would have done something about the situation earlier, but they'd never noticed before, as you don't get ahead on a glass of Chardonnay. New Labour are apparently committed to keeping froth out of the nation's beer and keeping it where it belongs in their policy documents. Matthew, which two primates are mates no longer?
Yes, this is the orangutan from Glasgow and the chimpanzee from... No, it's not at all, is it? I was thinking Cardinal Winning. This is...
some drugs, Matthew.
This is Archbishop, former Archbishop of Canterbury, Robert Runcie, being slagged off royally in the most typical Christian fashion by George Carey. Over, I don't know why it is. I think it's because George Carey wasn't asked to officiate at the confirmation of Prince William, and I think I suspect secretly he blames Runcie's remarks about Princess Diana last September, I think, in a biography, when he said she was a sort of scheming actress, I think. And with typical Christian forbearance, Carey's given him a good kicking.
I think that should be the entertainment before Alan's primary school's cup final. Archbishop fighting. Don't have a
3-minute round.
Don't have a bide with me. Have Carey and Runcie knocking 10 bells out of each other. 3 rounds. Not allowed to use their mitres.
In the biography, the reluctant Archbishop, Dr. Runcie, brands the princess an actress, a schemer, and says she's intellectually incapable. Dr. Carey claims that he has betrayed the royal family's trust in him, undermined his ministry, and screwed up his own chances of getting a really juicy book deal. He's concerned that the book also may have caused problems for Diana in that it has lots of long words but very few pictures. Tony, listen to this tune.
The minute things are keep around near me, memories of my younger days.
Tony, who's getting into a paddy keeping mum about being a granddad?
I can't believe Clive Dunn didn't have more hits, you know. Strange. This is a story about Paddy Ashdown, I think, because his daughter is very happily married and is going to give birth. And it looks more than likely that she'll give birth before the election. And he's rather worried about the fact that this will make him a granddad and spoil his image as this action man. And because he's the oldest of the prime ministerial candidates, so this is very bad news for him. He loves this sort of our former army man lads figure. In fact, before the last election, he actually gained popularity by admitting that he was a bit of an action man in every sense of the word. So this is very bad news. And it's just another example, I think, of kids just not caring, isn't it? Because if your dad is up for being prime minister, whatever, the least you can do is a year before an election is abstain from all kind of sexual contact with your husband, isn't it? But she selfishly goes on. And look what's happened now. Disaster. I blame the parents.
The answer is indeed Paddy Ashdown. We've been told we must do stories about all the main political parties. Well, we've done that, and now here's one about the Liberal Democrats. He's going to be a grandfather, and political enemies have suggested that he's touchy about the subject because he wants to keep his Action Man image. But since Action Man is a plastic imitation with no willy, this does not seem at all appropriate. Opinion is divided. Liberal Party headquarters believe a grandchild will improve their poll successes, because in 18 years' time, they'll have one more voter.
I thought all those orange frogs were something to do with the Lib Dems. When you see for no reason frogs suddenly appearing in Liberal Democrat colours, they haven't had an idea for 137 years, and they've said, we'll paint the frogs. Because they've appeared all over the country, these little orange frogs, in Lib Dem. Well, they can't get poster sites, they can't get time on television, they haven't got any ideas. Let's paint frogs.
Alan, whose parents confirm that where there's a will, there's a smile?
Parents? I mean, it's not... You're not talking about the royal parents.
It is.
Yeah. I never think of them as parents, really. I mean, there was some mechanical device that was cloned William, who's now grown, I see, to 6'1". He's larger than his mother, and he's 14, he's still growing. Again, he's 19-foot-tall king one day. I'm afraid of that. The Archbishop of Canterbury have to get on a ladder to put the crown on. Wonderful thought. I suppose it's because they met up for his confirmation. They didn't get any archbishop or anybody else. No one else turned up. But the future king, or two future kings, were met by one of their mothers and one of their wives for the purposes of confirming something. I don't know what they confirmed, because very little else has been confirmed about that relationship. But they smiled at one another.
This was the confirmation of Prince William at Windsor Chapel, attended by his parents, who were both happy and smiling. And funnily enough, the last time the couple appeared happy together was also in church. But then the sight of a strapping young rugby player on his knees calling out to God must have brought back some very happy memories for Diana. The Queen was also there, and she touchingly expressed the wish that Prince Edward might finally be confirmed, one way or another. And the scores at the end of round two are Andy and Matthew 7, but Alan and Tony still clinging to the lead with 9. Andy, what TV dinner for four dishes up the right stuff?
It's a TV series that's about to be screened, Simon. It's a fly-on-the-wall series. It's a marvellous technology. They give this little fly a camera, and they say... a miniaturised camera, and they say, right, and they filmed a dinner party, and what they got, surprise, surprise, was a lot of slightly drunk people sitting around spouting vaguely fascist views, like, you know, well, I think we should boil immigrants down for glue and stuff like that, and that kind of witty repartee that always happens at dinner parties when people have had a few bevies. It's on Channel 4, and it's not a sitcom, though, is it? There won't be a live audience or anything. It's not a game show.
Won't be any audience if it's Channel 4. it's Paul Watson has done it. He's done it deliberately to shaft the people that he managed to coerce into it. They didn't know they were appearing in it.
Matthew, listen to this.
When I wake up in the morning light, I pull on my jeans and I feel all right. I pull my blue jeans on. I pull my old blue jeans on. I pull my blue jeans on. I pull my old blue jeans on.
Matthew, who this week encouraged couples to say, "Oh, all right then," instead of "I do"?
Well, it's another vicar. How's that? Is that worth two?
Yes. No.
I haven't got the first clue what his name is, but he's certainly a Church of England vicar. He's so worried. About people having to spend a fortune on white dresses and the top hats and the tails and everything, that he's told them they should turn up in jeans if they want to.
It's a bit rough on the bridesmaids being dragged down the aisle while they're hanging onto somebody's turnip. So.
The Reverend John Ruffles has advocated casual weddings in jeans and T-shirts as a way for couples to save money on extravagant white weddings. He did suggest, however, that rings should still be slipped onto the bride's finger rather than pierced through her navel. Tony, who cooked his goose by refusing to boil his lobster?
Ah, this is an unemployed man in Penzance. I think he lost his job in, or he resigned from his job in London. He worked in a seafood restaurant because he wasn't prepared to boil the lobsters. He thought it was rather cruel to the lobsters. And now he's had his job seeker allowance stopped where he lives because he won't cook meat. But I just wondered how David Evans would have reacted to this story. You know, do we really want people claiming benefit in this country that aren't prepared to boil animals alive? Let's face it, lobsters are dead from the neck up anyway, aren't they?
He said it wasn't the screaming that upset him, it was the look in their eyes. Isn't that sweet?
I feel that about women.
But you haven't boiled any of those for a while, though.
I'll just take what I can get.
It's those little implements they give you to deal with it that bother me.
What, women?
Give you a little. If you order them, they give you a bib and lots of little implements to stick inside, don't they?
You want to get out more.
Simon Beavis claims he's been victimised and has no rights because he's a vegetarian. A spokesman for his local job centre, however, said this is nonsense. He has no rights because he's unemployed. Alan, who is teaching that Britain has gone down la toilette?
The French. have produced a book saying the British are bigots. Well, they would. There ain't no bloody frogs, were there?
There's
a book for French school children, just to bring them up right and say that we are nasty and we're dirty and we scratch a lot and boil lobsters.
And she said that we're chauvinists as well, and that word comes from
Chauvin,
Nicolas Chauvin, didn't she?
So, I also said we show off at every given opportunity. Did you know that?
Well, you and I do, obviously. We put those little outfits on, don't we, when we're with the women? We put them on, get all the implements out. Wait for that look in their eyes. Just hope they're going to be screaming by the end of the evening.
It's a book called Le Gros. I'm not going to pronounce that. It's a French school textbook which describes...
We just confirmed this woman's opinion of us.
Which describes the British as miserable and gullible, which seems fair. You've only got to see the miserable faces on those lorry drivers who are gullible enough to think that they can drive across France without being beaten up. The author, Professor Isabel Ayache, claims that Britain is primitive, backward, and going down the toilet, or as the French call it, a damp, smelly hole in the ground. The scores at the end of round three are Andy and Matthew have 11 points, but Alan and Tony are ahead with 13. Before we start the final round, here's a story seen in the Croydon Daily Post, sent in by Ted Shepherd of Thirlwall.
Police who stopped a car being driven erratically in Sussex found it was because the deaf occupants were having an argument in sign language.
You'll get no letters at all, you're in there.
Andy, you get the last musical clue. Andy, who ate less like pigs than apes? You've had the tricky questions, haven't you?
No, I'm stupid. I ate less like pigs.
It's an eating question, a scientific eating
it's not the skull, it's not the DNA tested skull that they discovered was the direct ascendant of some bloke down in the West Country, is it? No.
Neanderthal man.
Yes.
He's always
turned out to be something of Blair, right? He's been a very old man. He's actually a very new man. He's a new Labour man. He ate very ponty food with pine kernels and things slowly grilled. I think they found a piece of stone turd that belonged to him and they analysed it, because they're very strange people, archaeologists. Come home from a day's work, turn their pockets out, and wife says, "What's that, dearest?" "Stone turd. With a pine kernel in it." But yes, he was something of a gourmet, although his knuckles brushed the ground. When it came to the knife and fork, he knew what he was about.
I've got a question now, which has always bothered me about these stories. How do they know it was his stone turd? I mean, it is...
under his hat.
Tony, where will parkers have noses poked to curb their stay?
This is parking meters. Yes, there's a new invention, I think. I think a Canadian company have come up with this thing you put on the top of parking meters, and it's got radar on it, and it can tell everything that's happening round and about, and whether the car's pulled out, when it's pulled in, and it's actually got an inbuilt cell phone or something in it, and it can phone the nearest warden, and he comes running over and nabs you or whatever, and then it makes the warden a cup of coffee and sits him down. And I think you can also put credit cards in the top of the thing as well. So they're so intelligent, these things, you can actually bribe them as well. You know, give them 300 quid and say, "Don't tell the warden," and they're fine with that. And I think they're thinking of introducing it or trying it out. They're trying it out in some American places. Cities, I suppose, not just places. Need to be somewhere where there are cars. It would be pointless.
Alan, why might cabbies get passengers a mobile tip?
A company called Siemens. It's a German company. Unfortunately, has the sense of humour of all German companies. So they're giving 100 cabbies a cell phone each. And the cabbie shoves back that slot of his confession. He says, I had that Siemens in the back of the Wurstlein the other day. And it's a wonderful device, you know. And they're encouraging cabbies to talk. They think this is good public relations. They're encouraging cabbies to talk about the wonders of cell phones. So the passengers sitting in the back, who want a little bit of light relief, will learn about the Siemens cell phone, which cabbies believe should be hung and sent back where they came from, really. But because they're being paid to sell them, they will sell them.
I'm not joining in this because I want to get a cab home. I want to get one next week. I don't want to say, oh, you're that bloke on that news quiz. Yeah, that was very funny, that round. That round about how stupid cabbies are, that was extremely funny round that was, and you don't mind going via Leipzig to Boreham, would do you? No.
The London Cabs governing body, off rip, say they may back say they may well ban this commercial banter and force cabbies to go back to more acceptable practices such as promoting public flogging of dole scroungers and supporting Enoch Powell for Prime Minister. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, I'm indebted to Ted Shepherd of Thelwall, who sent me in this from this cutting from the Glasgow Herald. I think it's the most imaginative use of the phrase quash fears that I've ever heard. A Scottish water authority is flying pink balloons over a proposed sewage work site to quash fears it will be an eyesore.
Matthew.
Well, my one's from Variety, the showbiz magazine, and just to make sure that the woman who wrote the report in France knows that we do like to laugh at funny foreigners, it reports that Egyptian film translators have been warned to dramatically improve their English or face dismissal following the translation of a Hollywood movie's reference to W.C. Fields as toilet pastures.
Tony.
This has been sent in by Mr. P.J. Hatch from Bedfordshire. It's from the Daily Mail. A little article that just goes, an English couple spent an extra night on holiday in Holland after forgetting where they parked their car. Police in Haarlem, near Amsterdam, found them a hotel for the night while they searched for the vehicle, which the couple told them was somewhere near a canal.
Alan.
Well, what have you heard from anybody, Simon? I'm indebted to me for spotting this in Thursday's Daily Telegraph. It says, staff at Eddie Tannock's Jewellers in Brighton, East Sussex, threw a box at thieves who smashed the shop window with a sledgehammer, only to see the box break open and scatter hundreds of diamonds into the broken glass.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Andy and Matthew have 13 points, but Alan and Tony are comfortable winners this week with 19 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from The Independent.
Margaret Ann Hunter is seeking a divorce 4 months after her wedding in Virginia, USA, to Thorne Wesley Jameson Groves, after discovering that her husband was a woman. Mr. Musgroves bound her breasts with bandages because of chest injuries, and their post-marital petting was confined to clothed fondlings. Something was wrong, Miss Hunter said, and I couldn't put my finger on it.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Andy Hamilton, Matthew Norman and Tony Hawkes. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer. The producer was Aled Evans.